Welcome to the X Zone, everyone. My name is Rob McConnell, and for the next 4 hours, I'm your host and your guide as together we cross the time-space continuum to this place that I call the X Zone. It's a place where people dare to believe and dare to be heard. It's a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. And we're coming to you live from our broadcast center in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. It's minus 32 degrees outside our studios right now. In Winnipeg, Manitoba, it's minus 52 degrees. In fact, it is colder in many parts of the United States and Canada than it is, believe it or not, according to NASA, on Mars. And yet, the surprising and the sad fact is, tonight and every other night, whether it's freezing temperatures, whether it's raining, whether it's snowing, whether it's in the middle of the heat of the high summer temperatures, there are people in every major city, in every community, no matter where you go in Canada, the United States, Great Britain, you name it, there are homeless people. Well, my guest today is J.S. Levy. We're talking to Jay about his book entitled Pre-Treatment Guide for Homeless Outreach and Housing First. And Jay has spent the last 25 years working with individuals who experience homelessness. He is the author of the newly published book, Pre-Treatment for the Homeless Outreach and Housing First, helping couples, youth, and unaccompanied adults, as well as the highly acclaimed book, Homeless Narratives, and Pre-Treatment Pathways from Words to Housing. Jay has also published a monograph and several journal articles on homelessness issues, and he's now joining us. And Jay, first of all, to you and the people who you work with and other organizations around the world, God bless you for the great work that you're doing. And are we getting any closer, Jay, in your opinion, to getting everyone a home?
Well, you know, it's an interesting and at the same time very challenging and difficult issue. First of all, thanks for having me on the show today. It's a pleasure to be here and to be, you know, on the radio and in a warm place where people care, as opposed to being out there on the streets and in the cold. You know, there's already a number of people who have died out during this very cold spell that everyone is so painfully aware of right now. So we're out there doing our best on a day-to-day basis, doing the outreach and meeting people, you know, one at a time, and trying to get them in from the cold into safety. There has been across the United States and to some degree in Canada as well, a movement called Housing First, and it's been an exciting change in terms of the philosophy of helping people who are out there. And it really is about trying to get people into homes as quickly as possible and building support services around them.
Why is homelessness and the plight of the needy such a dirty secret in today's society? Why don't we just admit it's there and work for a common cause, work for a common goal, get these people into homes, feed them, for goodness sake, clothe them, get them jobs? What is wrong with society?
Yeah, it's really mind-boggling when you think about it, because when it comes to lots of issues, whether it's mental illness, whether it's addiction, whether it's people without home, we tend to cast that aside and not take these folks you know, in the serious kind of manner and approach that really needs to be done. I think it must on some level connect to our own vulnerability and in part perhaps to the myth of kind of capitalist society, you know, that it's up to the individual to move forward and take care of oneself, and we don't really want to be reminded that many of us are, you know, a paycheck away from being homeless and vulnerable.
Jay, you and I have to take a commercial break. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Whatever happened to I am my brother's keeper? I'll be back. Don't go away.
Keeping all the letters. I'm sitting in the railway station, got a ticket for my destination. On a tour of one night stands, my suitcase and guitar in hand. And every stop is neatly planned for a poet and a one-man band. Homeward bound, I wish I was
when my thoughts are skipping home, when my music's playing home, when my love lies waiting silently for me.
Homeward Bound by Simon and Garfunkel. The odds are that everyone listening to this show tonight, around the world, or sometimes some part of the world, it's during the daytime, are going home tonight, or they're at home. But for many, many, many people, they don't have a home to go to. They don't have a job, they don't have proper clothing, they are, for some reason, and this is a reason I have never understood as a broadcaster, a journalist, a police officer. Why do we as a society not give a damn, Jay? And I've seen children homeless. I've seen teenagers homeless. I've seen middle-aged people homeless. I've seen senior citizens homeless. And it really irks me, Jay, when there are so many buildings that are owned by municipal, federal, state governments that are just sitting there doing nothing, where, in my opinion, they can be converted into homes, temporary homes, until we can get these people back on their feet. It seems that, in my opinion, Jay, we're doing everything backwards instead of going forwards.
Well, I think that's been, you know, true for many years. You know, the shelters themselves have become real kind of warehouses for people without homes, and it hasn't really been treated as a triage kind of situation. You know, they talk about emergency shelters, and instead they've turned into these, like, locations where people just sort of sit there and not much happens. And so what there really needs to be a change, and it has been slowly happening. I want to underline the word slowly, but there has been some progress in some places, and I can give you some of the numbers on
Please
that.
Please do.
But what we've seen is, like I said, more of a push toward housing first and more of a push toward looking at how to, when people first enter shelter, to be meeting with them right away and working on that kind of thorny problem of not having a home, not having enough income, and how to get these folks the support that they need, and assessing each person quickly and getting the services and the housing to them. Now, that being said, there's not enough resources, not enough money. It is underfunded. Where there has been progress has been with homeless veterans, for instance. There's been a great deal of money over the past year, couple years actually, going toward homeless veterans, trying to help them. And that's been the VASH program, which is Veterans Affairs Supportive Housing Program. And it puts together affordable housing plus support service and targets veterans directly.
Yeah, but is that the government's way of kind of pacifying their own guilt? You know, because, you know, no disrespect to the men and women who volunteer to protect us and our democracy, but when I see homeless children, they have the same rights and they have the same God-given freedoms as the vets do, that they too should have homes. It's, you know, I can't see governments funneling to one agency and not to the other. That just burns me.
Yeah, well, that was one example. I mean, there's also been a reduction in the chronically homeless folks across the U.S. with this kind of housing first model I've been talking about, and the unsheltered homeless as well. Now, when I say it's getting better, I'm not saying it's happening quick enough.
Right.
I mean, on a yearly basis across the U.S., there's 1.5 million people seeking shelter annually. I mean, we know that from the annual counts that are done. And on any given day in the U.S., there's over 600,000 people homeless. In other words, like right now as we speak, there's 600,000 people or more, 600,000 that we know of, without homes that are in need of help. And so, you know, you're right to say, hey, look, there's 25% of the homeless are children. So, yeah, it is a crime. You have these people who, you know, deserve better, who need better. And ultimately, we all pay a price when we're not there to help with a home and the services needed, because what happens in the end is folks end up struggling, they're impoverished, they end up getting sick, they're more prone to illness, the kids don't do as well in school, they become you know, economically mm-hmm. challenged down the line and in yeah. the future. There's high rates of trauma. You know, it affects all of society. So
sure
it's
does.
Really in our best interest to have a coherent and good and targeted policy to do this. And there is a lot of talk on the government level, both in Canada and in the U.S., but unfortunately, the money and the resources haven't really been there as effectively as they need to be.
When it comes to the government, any government anywhere in the world, talk is cheap. They tell
right.
the population and the elected the electorate exactly what they want to hear. They want to get elected. They have homes to go to at night. They have cars. They have a good education. They've got a great health plan. They eat well. And you know, I've said this many times, Jay, that if I was President of the United States or Prime Minister of Canada, what I would do is, number one, I would cancel the space program. Take care of the people on this planet first. Once you've accomplished that, then go into outer space. You know, there are so many foolish, stupid, idiotic programs that governments, corporations, and individuals are involved with, that if they were to funnel their energy, their finances, and their resources into solving these problems that affect 1.5 million Americans, and I don't know how many hundreds of thousands Canadians. I think the last count was 266,000 homeless Canadians. Make sure they have a home. Make sure they have clothing and all the other basic sociological needs. They don't understand, or they do, and they just neglect the fact that, as you were saying, number one, it would decrease the drain, the financial drain on the medical society and the medical systems that we have, because if people are homeless, they get sick, they go to the hospitals, and then society has to pick up the tab because they can't afford medical care. They can't afford medicine. So why is it that you and I can see this problem, you and I work at making this problem go away, and the people who have the money, the resources, and the power to make this happen don't?
Yeah, I wish I had a simple answer for that, and I don't. I mean, I think that, you know, there is a for-profit motive that's out there,
sure,
and I think that colors a lot of things and people's thinking. And so, you know, there's an issue when you look at kind of governments and people taking care of the folks that are already the folks, you know, either with the money or with the opportunity, as opposed to reaching out to the folks who are, you know, truly in need and impoverished. But I do think in the end it all kind of boomerangs back and affects all of us.
Sure
so, you know, if we want a better society, it's really in the long-term interests of the people in power to put the money, you know, where their mouth is
sure.
in terms of the rhetoric.
Tell me, Jay, what's your story? How did you get involved doing the great work you're doing?
Well, I really began, I'd say, back in the 1980s, so we're going back quite some time. And I remember I lived in New York City, really out in Brooklyn, and would travel into New York each day. And I would carry with me a dollar and change and give it out to the people that were in need and obviously homeless and on the streets. And it kind of dawned on me as I was doing that, this is kind of the I don't know, a dilemma that I think a lot of people face that give out money to folks that they don't know. You kind of wonder where the money is going, how it's being spent. Is it really helping the person or not? And it dawned on me that it would be interesting to really learn about people's worlds and lives and hear their stories and really think about how we can help them in a more effective and targeted way. And that made me get interested in social work. And I went to Columbia University, went to school there, and started doing homeless outreach. And it was really during the time of the kind of explosion of homelessness in the U.S., which was in the 80s. I mean, you had, after the inpatient hospitals were closing, psych hospitals, during the 60s, you had, you know, some increases for people with severe mental illness hitting the streets. But in the 80s, with the crack epidemic and HIV/AIDS and, you know, it seemed like an increase in runaway youth and all sorts of things going on, you know, we started to see just homelessness everywhere. On every subway cart, you'd see someone who's homeless. And And so I was, it was just in my consciousness. It was right on the doorstep in Brooklyn where I lived. I'd see people who were homeless. And so it made me interested, and I started working with the Manhattan Bowery Corporation. And we used to have a kind of not a nice term, but we used to call folks who were homeless years and years ago. I didn't, but others did, Bowery bums.
Yeah, the Bowery Boys. I remember that.
Yeah. And so the Manhattan Bowery Corporation was one of the first nonprofits that was out there in New York City working in the Bowery, mm-hmm. and they worked with the flop houses and the local detox and did outreach to back then, which was known as, you know, people who were drunk and homeless.
Right.
But, you know, that's really changed over the years, the face of homelessness, and it's just such a variety of populations and people that are out there from really all walks of life. So I found it very interesting doing the outreach, meeting people, getting to know mm-hmm. where they are, where they come from, kind of their words, ideas, values, and to offer help in a meaningful way that they could kind of hear and make some decisions for themselves on how to move forward.
You know, you come around Christmas time, you've always got these different organizations that have their door open for Christmas donations. But what people do not realize is that there are hungry people, homeless people, all year long. And it seems that come Christmas, the hearts and the wallets open up. But I just wish to heaven that people would remember that, number one, that people are hungry and homeless all year round. They can use their support, whether it's money, food, clothing, whatever you can do to help. Be part of the solution instead of being part of the problem. And when it comes to different religious organizations, I wish... Once again, I wish a lot of things in life, and I do my very best to try and make a change each day. If you're a Catholic or if you're a Christian, Christ was homeless when he was born. And I think that people don't see the connections, and if they do, they don't like connecting the dots, because I think there's a lot of shame that goes along with being arrogant and playing the ostrich and keeping your head in the sand when problems arise, or they're presented to you right in front of you. Jay, you and I have to take our news break at the bottom of the hour. We'll be back on the other side of this commercial break with the news. Don't go away.
This is the X-Zone Radio TV show with Rob McConnell on the X-Zone Broadcast Network and our worldwide family of broadcast affiliates.
Something in your eyes makes me want to lose myself. Makes me want to lose myself. There's something in your voice that makes my heart beat fast. Hope this feeling lasts the rest of my life. If you
back, everyone. J.S. Levy is our special guest. He is the author of Pre-Treatment Guide for Homeless Outreach and Housing First. His website is www.jslevy.com. Jay, can you share with us what exactly your work with PATH program is and what PATH does?
Okay, well, PATH is an acronym that stands for Projects Assisting Transitions from Homelessness. It gets both federal and state funds, My company is named Elliott CHS, and it's a private nonprofit company. And we employ outreach workers that go out to the shelters, to the streets, to the parks, and basically connect with people on a one-on-one basis, form the trusting relationships that's necessary to move things forward. And we really work on connecting with people in terms of understanding where they're coming from, what they need, assessing in terms of mental health issues, medical issues, addiction issues, but also, of course, looking at housing as the main thing that, that folks need. So we're really based on trying to match people to the appropriate kind of housing and support service that'll help move things forward. And our focus is on mental health concerns, but we work with a variety of folks. And it's all primarily folks who are unaccompanied adults and living on the shelters or on the streets.
Jay, I was wondering if you could tell us what some of the main causes of today's homelessness are.
Well, of course, there's the economic drivers to homelessness, which
right.
is key. So I never want to, like, underestimate the influence of that. And so, you know, joblessness or just not getting pay at a level that's sustainable to keep people in housing. So the need for, you know, livable wages or livable income is really paramount, very important. Housing costs are through the roof in some places. So having affordable housing is needed, and the lack of affordable housing is a major cause. What we see over time also, though, is there's people out there who are, you know, fleeing abuse,
right.
trauma. So you have people with from domestic violence trying to be mm-hmm. safe, and some of those folks end up homeless. You have youth that have been either leaving foster care because they've aged out, or runaway youth. There's a very high amount of people from the LGBT population, people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, who are not feeling accepted or perhaps even feel abused in terms of where they're living, and therefore they kind of take off and hit the streets at an early age. There's been studies to show that of the homeless youth population, 20 to 30% fall within this kind of LGBT realm. You got, veterans returning home from war that we talked a little bit about,
yes.
and many of them have sustained head injuries or perhaps have a post-traumatic stress disorder and so are really struggling with that and are on the streets. You got people, natural disaster victims, from earthquakes and hurricanes and floods and things like that, who end up homeless and are in need of emergency help. And then you have, among the long-term homeless, people who are out there either episodically or for a year or more and are continuously homeless, you see high rates of mental illness and addiction and medical issues as well. So, and then you have homeless families, of course, which 25% of the homeless are children. So, there's a lot of various causes. A lot of it's economic drivers, but the longer people are out there, the more evident it becomes that you're also folks struggling with mental health concerns and addiction and mm-hmm. major medical issues as well.
Tell me, when it comes to new Americans, people who immigrate to the United States, what percentage of these new Americans end up being homeless?
You know what? I think it's a fairly low percentage when you talk about literal homelessness. That means people
on the streets yeah.
or people in shelters. You don't really see a lot of that. I mean, we do outreach. I could say across Massachusetts, which I think is pretty friendly to new Americans overall in terms of if you were to compare it to some other states. We don't see too many immigrants or people who would be considered illegal or what have you. On our caseloads. Of course, a lot of those folks don't want to be identified.
That's right. They want to stay under the radar.
Right. So it makes it a little harder
sure.
to really get those numbers, and there's no real good counts on that. When you hear about all the homeless stats and all that, I've never seen a number that connects to new Americans or illegal immigrants.
But let me ask you this, as a person who is in the field, why is it that the number of immigrated, American immigrants and Canadian immigrants are so low compared to the naturalized or the people who are born here.
Why are they so low in terms of
homelessness? Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I think part of it is connected to, like I said, that they're trying to stay under the radar.
So no, I'm talking about legal immigration. I'm not talking about illegal immigration.
Uh huh. So, in terms of the homeless population, I don't know. I would think the people that are coming in that are legally immigrating maybe are setting up in advance more of a support system. There's some things. When you're legally immigrating in, there's some support services and things like that that people can connect to. They might have family connections. So I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that.
All right. I was just wondering.
Might have more of a supportive community that they're connecting into.
So in your opinion, are homeless shelters an effective way of serving people without homes? And if not, what can be done to make them better?
Yeah, well, homeless shelters are, like I said, are kind of a way of serving folks where they've been warehoused for the most part. So it's a way of really giving a blessing to chronic homelessness, unless you really change the whole shelter system where it becomes more of a triage, where you're meeting people right away and really trying to resolve the problem of people without homes and how are we going to match them to the affordable housing placement as well as the income that they need to sustain it, and of course the support services for those who need extra support. So that's being done in some areas. You know, in Massachusetts and Central Mass, I've been involved with a particular shelter out there that takes this kind of triage approach, and they've been able to really greatly reduce the chronic homeless numbers. The overall homeless numbers are still pretty high because you have kind of the economics of the situation, very high unemployment right now. As you know, the economy has been really tough on everybody. And so, you know, in terms of short-term homelessness, which is about 80% of the people that end up homeless and going through shelters, are more short-term. So for those folks, you need to have maybe some funds available and some good job programs and ways of connecting people to employment, as well as maybe getting them some quick funds that will help with maybe initial monies to help get them housed and get that first month's rent paid. But in terms of the folks that are out there longer term, it, you know, it's a more complicated approach where you need a lot more support service and you need more kind of targeted funds and outreach workers that can really connect people to you know, treatment type services, as well as the housing, as well as the supports.
Tell me about your book. Why did you write it, and what is your goal as an author?
Well, I have two books out, as you mentioned earlier, and really both are about telling the stories of people who are out there. I think we can learn so much by just understanding the individual stories and the different reasons a person is homeless and how they kind of look at their world. And you know, there's an old saying, it says to reach out to the poor, and you'd be surprised when you do that how much you get out of it personally. And I think the stories in my books of people I've met, whether it's out on the streets in New York City or whether it was in the shelters in Boston or out in the woods in Western Mass, it's really amazing to hear these stories of survival and overcoming and how outreach can make a real difference in people's lives. And I also provide a method toward helping. I call it a pre-treatment model. It's based on five basic universal principles toward how to reach out to people and build the relationships and work on a common language. And from there, to help support transitions and to promote safety and ultimately to support people through the process of change so that they can have a better life. So I feel good in offering that model out to people, to other outreach workers, but also to concerned, you know, citizens that just want to hear these different stories and know about homelessness from kind of the inside out and really are open to, you know, learning from others as well as being able to maybe use some of the lessons from these stories in their own lives to reach some of the vulnerable people they might know in their own families, neighbors, or what have you.
Let me ask you this. after all the people that you've had the occasion to speak to over the years and work with who are homeless, and based on your book that talks about these, and have you and that you've had people tell you their stories, mm-hmm. what is the life or what is the world of a homeless person like?
Yeah, well, it's really interesting because on the one level, there's just the day-to-day survival and kind of what we call the immediacy needs of,
right. You
know, shelter and just struggling to get by. Think of anyone that's been unemployed for a period of time and what happens to your psyche over time if you're unable to continue to find employment. It gets very hard to get up in the morning and keep striving, for that next interview and to be confident and to feel like you can be successful. So we meet a lot of people that are really, you know, downtrodden, that are feeling kind of helpless. But at the same time, there's something about the human mind which is amazing, which is the kind of the meaning-making process. So what I like to say is, as human beings, we're all meaning-makers. We have a story to tell. We have a certain set of values that connects us to the world around us. And, you know, for instance, I met a guy named Ray. He called himself Old Man Ray because he was in his 60s. He was a World War II veteran. This was out in the 80s. He was living at the Port Authority in New York City, and I talk about this in my first book, Homeless Narratives and mm-hmm. Pretreatment Pathways. And what was really just amazing about his story is he saw himself as the night watchman at the Port Authority. So you had a guy who was 67 years old, without a home. Really, on the one hand, you'd think he'd be helpless, but when I approached him and tried to help, he kind of turned to me and he wanted to give me advice. He saw himself as kind of being an information center, someone who was sort of a protector of the Port Authority, knew all the things that were going on, saw himself in charge. Mm-hmm. And this is the way people often deal with trauma in their lives. There was a gentleman by the name of Viktor E. Frankl. He wrote the book Man's Search for Meaning. And he says that, it's a great quote, he says, despair is suffering without meaning. And so rather than kind of experience the despair that homelessness can bring, instead we meet these folks that are really able to create these amazing worlds and find a sense of control within it often. And as the outreach worker, the key is, and this is why I like telling these stories to really show this process, is to connect to people's meanings and to be able to then work off of that, their values, and then connect that to a road where they can have a better life so that they can embrace the choices that we're giving them. Because the average person that you approach when they're homeless and you try to give them some options and talk about things they can do to make their life better, if they don't trust you or if they think you're coming from an authority kind of place, they're going to refuse to help. And they might even be very angry at you. And as a result, there's kind of this myth that's out there that there's a lot of people who are homeless that don't want help. But it's really not true. If you get to know people and you build a trusting relationship and you use a kind of common language that the person can connect to, you'd be surprised. Almost everybody is saying, yes, I'd like some help. And if you can assist me with a pathway forward out of this, I'll go down that road.
Jay, stand by. You and I have to take our final break. Exxon Nation, J.S. Levy is our special guest. www.jslevy.com. And we're talking about homelessness. Now, no matter where you are listening to me on this beautiful planet of ours, be part of a solution instead of part of a problem. Help where you can, if you can. Food, money, clothing, whatever. We'll be back on the other side of this commercial break. Don't go away.
I'm fine, baby. You're my love, you're my angel, you're the girl of my dream. I like, thank you, oh baby, for waiting patiently. Daddy's home, Daddy's home to stay.
Exxon Nation, J.S. Levy is our special guest. His website is www.jslevy.com. That's www.jayslevy.com. First of all, Jay, I want to thank you so much for joining us. What would you like to tell the Exxon Nation tonight? Now, you're talking to a worldwide audience, so here's your best venue, your best opportunity for getting a message across.
Well, I mean, let me just say that I think the most important thing we can do in the end is to really connect with somebody and build an authentic, trusting relationship with others who are in need. You'd be surprised how healing relationships can be. It really makes a difference in people's lives. And like I said, the pre-treatment guide that I talk about in the book is really the fundamentals of how to do that really, really well. You know, in the end, you know, so much just comes down to the connections we have with people as opposed to ignoring folks. And I think if we start with the caring and the connection, a lot of good policy, a lot of good everything else will kind of drive from there.
Jay, have you heard any or have any horror stories ever been relayed to you about people who have gone out and tried to work with the people who are homeless, gain their trust, and it's backfired on them?
Well, look, that does happen. I've read stories of you know, outreach workers who have been murdered. Things like that does happen. So there's a risk to everything in life. But I don't think it's something that's really all that worrisome, because what I found, and I've been doing this for many years, I did outreach myself for over 20 years, and I currently oversee 14 outreach workers that are out there.
Yes, but you're a professional. You went to school for this. But I mean,
oh, I see what you're saying.
But what I'm saying is, you know, we were talking about what we can do to help. Doesn't law enforcement strongly suggest that you leave this to the professionals?
Well, I think you're right that there's people that, in their quest to save others, sometimes go out there and they don't really know what they're getting into.
Exactly.
They're not very boundary. They might invite someone they don't know very well, like off the streets, to
their
home,
house,
and then all of a sudden they're having trouble on how do you get the person out? How do you get? And it might be someone who has either a major mental illness or an addiction that's active, or you know, there are some people out there that are, you know, antisocial, that have long criminal records, that are out on the streets. You know, part of one of the causes to homelessness that we didn't talk about in too much detail is institutional discharges, and that includes discharges from the jails and the prisons. So you do get an element out there that can be, you know, dangerous, and you're right that, you know, it does. If you're going to take someone into your home, that's very risky, and I wouldn't recommend that to anyone, that you just kind of go out there and try to solve homelessness on your own by, you know, inviting people in. But I do recommend that you know, to say hello to people on the street who are homeless in your neighborhood that you're seeing on a regular basis, to know people's names, to give them maybe some information on resources that are out there, you know, where the soup kitchens are or where outreach workers are.
Hey, Jay, I hate to do this, but our time is up for tonight. I want to thank you so much for joining us, and, you know, God bless you for the work you do, the work that your other outreach people do, and other people like you around the world. You're making this a better place to live, one person at a time. ExoNation, www.jslevy.com. J.S. Levy has been my guest, and we'll be back on the other side of the news. Don't go away.